So welcome back to Pax Europiana and the discussions, the introductory discussions about the seven sisters, the big seven organizations which make up the global world order. And this is obviously the NATO, which really is the fundament of our present system. The European Union, the big peace and prosperity project in Europe. And obviously the OECD, the Marshall Plan and the Good Governance Organization, now the Union of Market Democracies, and for Human Rights, the OECD, and then obviously the Council of Europe in a partnership with the OECD, obviously, and then the WTO. I've talked about all six of them. Now comes the, in a way, the most important, in a way, also the most problematic, it's the United Nations. It's a wonderful, wonderful organization, and there's so much good coming from the United Nations. But obviously, it's also deeply problematic because of the way decisions are taken and the way the world ultimately is in this big power competition between the West, Russia, and China, and the way the UN was designed in the year 44, 45, in the post-World War II planning of the United States. And they basically, the democratic leadership around Roosevelt, they of course all having been in the disaster of the World War II, in the disaster of the interwar years, and in the debacle of the non-ratification of the League of Nations and the Versailles Treaty, and obviously in the failure on the total breakdown of the global order, which was culminating in World War II. They wanted to build a better world, and they almost managed. The organization is good, the fundamentals are good, the principles are good, but obviously in the world of the allied situation, it was obviously necessary to involve the Soviet Union in this veto power position and also to grant China this fifth seat in the United Nations Security Council and organize the system in that United Nations, which is still today. Obviously, for some reasons which is inexplicable to me, and the Russian Federation has inherited the seat of the Soviet Union and now wields all this enormous power of basically, while the Russian Federation is only half of the Soviet Union. And other things come also into account, especially after 2014, when the Russian Federation, with the invasion of Ukraine and Crimea, has basically torn up its commitment to the global system and to peace and to the UN Charter, and then to continue to be sitting there with veto power and doing its kind of dodgy activities is very deeply problematic. Similar can be said about the situation of China, because ultimately it was free China of the Deng Xiaoping, of Chiang Kai-shek, who was integrated with all these powers into the Security Council. Then the communists took over in 49, and then they were readmitted in 71, actually on the application of Albania. And obviously that was in the context of the Soviet intervention in Czechoslovakia, where basically the Chinese were really very upset, almost led to war with the Soviet Union. And then it was understood by the West it might be useful and to give China a bigger role on the global stage inside the communist world as well as a counterweight to the Soviet Union. That was this famous Nixon and Kissinger strategy, which we basically, I think, was very successful and one of the reasons we won the Cold War and which we should continue today. So I'm, in a way, some say I'm soft on China. I confess, I really think China has a right to develop, but always must be also confronted when it does things wrong. But I'm very strict on Russia. It should be frozen, the veto right of Russia in the United Nations. And I will come back to that in this video, in this podcast. I've also made several videos about it on my YouTube channel. The thing is, if you want to be a credible international organization, then when you are a rule giver, and this is the idea of being in the Security Council, and a rule enforcer, then you cannot be the rule breaker. I mean, when you don't care for the rules, how should anybody take the rules seriously? And this is the problem of the Russian veto power, and it's very deeply problematic. And in some ways, to a much lesser extent, it can be said about China as well. I think we should focus on the Russian situation, because China has also legitimate rights to be represented. It's a very big power, it's a lot of population, and it has not attacked anybody since it was readmitted to, let's say, since the most favored nation. In the 70s, it was still problematic, but since 79, and thanks to Jinping's historic visit to Washington, D.C., and the later admission of the most favored nation status by the U.S. To China, it has not attacked anybody, and that's a big difference. We can really not say that about the Soviet Union or Russia. So good. What I also think deeply problematic in the United Nations is that countries which are totally illegitimate dictatorships and broken up, like total disaster countries, I count in that category now Belarus after August, but Syria since 2011, yeah, Venezuela, yeah. But also countries like we have this Cuba, Nicaragua, you know, it's all maybe nice people, but they are governed by dictators. And they go and to the UN, do grandstanding and vote and somehow have this legitimacy of the global platform and their membership in it. I'm not sure, do they pay membership fees? Yeah? Do they really somehow care for any of the things the UN is about, from principles, values, human rights? I'm sure they break them every single day, but then they are allowed to vote. For example, recently I made this list of shame, two of them basically, of 17 countries voting against the Crimea resolution recently, and 21 in the next one. One of us was about the militarization and one about human rights there. And obviously the Russians mainly, but also the Chinese have mobilized their voting power in the UN. And then you see that Venezuela, which is very contested, Belarus, very contested, yeah, leadership situation, they simply vote and claim some global legitimacy by voting in the UN. Also Syria, I mean, don't get me started about Serbia voting with the Russian hostiles on this man. That's outrageous. For this alone, Serbia should be losing the candidate status. Yeah, but nevertheless, yeah, we have also some leftovers of the communist world in Africa, from Zimbabwe to Angola to Sudan and others. Russia is very active, building its own coalitions, and also the Chinese. Yeah. But you see, it's ultimately the Russians who are really dominating the hostile agenda. You know that the Chinese build some infrastructure and make so-called debt and traps. And that's basically what the Western countries have done for 250 years. Yeah. So let's not get too excited about that one. But what we really have to contain is the hostile Russian influence buying the dictatorships of Africa into as useful voting bodies in the UN. And this is deeply problematic. So I call countries which are in a legitimacy crisis, like Belarus, Syria, Venezuela, definitely their voting rights must be frozen. Huh? We don't need them to vote and tell us what is the really situation in other countries, when the countries are totally disastrous and have millions lost and 500,000 died, and then Assad can vote on human rights in other countries or be in committees, his diplomats? Certainly not. Yeah. This is very damaging for, you know, because there's billions of consumers, people who watch politics, interest, and then they think UN is perfect organization. And then comes this kind of situation. And when you take a closer look, then you find this out and you really are not so, it's not satisfactory. So we have to reform the UN. I understand it's very complicated because exactly of the existing power structures of the Security Council. But we have to make very clear what we really want, a kind of a UN decision-making structure, and then to fight for it, to promote it and to discuss it and to say this is what we want. Obviously, Russia should be frozen in its veto power, and we have to clearly demand that because it's unacceptable after 2014, same like in the Council of Europe. But this is all totally beyond any reason. You cannot occupy other countries, integrate them, their land in your, with some claims to historic legitimacy. I mean that Vienna could take half of Europe easily under this kind of dodgy claims. And you know, there's so much land border changes possible when you want. I mean, it's totally out of the normal. And so Russia should be frozen. And then you have the proposal I have for the Security Council is pretty simple. We have four big state unions. You know, these are really big federations with nuclear powers as well. That's to taking into consideration. And that's basically the United States of America. That's India. That's China. And that's Russia. Russia, obviously, to be frozen, but then also to be readmitted after they have withdrawn from the occupied regions of Ukraine. But Russia is an important state union. I call it a federation state. You can always discuss like this. But there's four different one in that size and that dimension of global significance. That's basically the United States. That's India. That's China and Russia. And it is also totally unacceptable that India is not in the Security Council. This is just explainable by the late breakaway, the independence of India, when basically India was in 47 and there was the UN already created, and it took some time for India to consolidate. So ultimately, India should be in the Security Council. So, and who else? And these are four, basically. And then I call on six regional organizations. And regional political integration systems to be represented in the UN also permanently. And this basically then it's 4 plus 6, so it's 10. And these 10 should be permanently in the UN Security Council, each of them with a veto power and no kind of elections for new powers because they're all represented in the regional federation. And this will strengthen the regional federations, and this is very important. So I sum up the most important. Clearly, you know, as a European, I'm very much in favor of the European Union yielding this power of veto and to represent the whole European Union. So that means the French Securities Council seat is moving to Mr. Michel, to the President of the European Union, in coordination with his foreign minister, Mr. Borrell, and the government, basically the Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen. So ultimately, the French from Paris moving to Brussels. This is the number one thing, and by the way, that we can do without Russian consent. Yeah? It's basically just an informal transfer of power of this seat and veto towards the European Union delegation, and this is the start of the process. Yeah? And then we have also five other regional federations with which the EU can do strategic partnerships, partly it has already. And then also promise that once the UN is reformed, the EU will lobby, obviously, hopefully with the US, to get the UN permanent seat for these other five regional integration systems. The one is quite obvious. It's the African Union, who should represent the African states and sits in Addis Ababa and should have a veto power. Then it's also the Organization of American States to represent all American countries. Obviously, in a way, then the US will have also a say in that one, but that's not a big problem. They will somehow be in the Council of OAS, also yielding their influence inside that organization. But obviously, all American countries will be represented by the Secretary General of the Organization of American States. Then you have the ASEAN countries, and here I call for enlargement of ASEAN countries. That means that currently 10 countries. To also include Bangladesh and Papua New Guinea and also East Timor, but also to add the countries, the most important addition is, of course, Japan and is, of course, South Korea. So there is also, I always say on Twitter, ASEAN without Japan is like the European Union without Germany. That's the most important ASEAN country in many ways. It's, of course, a very big country, like Germany is very big in the European Union. They will have to find the modus vivendi to accommodate the past, the terrible crimes Imperial Japan has done. But, you know, we have also found a way for the terrible crimes, which two wars, basically, and the Holocaust, which Imperial Germany and Nazi Germany has done to Europe. And so we found a very good way. And also, this is maybe a model for ASEAN 14, I call it. But it couldn't be just ASEAN, But the idea is also to represent Japan and South Korea. Obviously, the Japanese want to sit directly, as the Germans want to sit directly. But given the size and the reality of power in the world, I don't recommend it. And it's also not very good. You know, we are not trying to create regional big powers to dominate others, but we try to really have the European model. And that's also Pax Europiana, to be exported towards the whole world and also to be active and represented and to be globally presented. Yeah. So here is basically the whole concept. Yeah. And then we have also the ASEAN, that's I told, the Organization of American States, the African Union, the European Union, and then there comes two more problematic and smaller cases, I admit, but they're also very important in this overall concept of reforming the UN. That's the Commonwealth of Nations, because that's basically Britain and Australia, New Zealand, but also others who want to be in the Commonwealth and also to find common decision. But the British seat in the UN Security Council cannot stay with the Brits, obviously. Yeah? They are much too small a nation and not to compete with India and China and to be at the same table in a sense. But in form of the Commonwealth, it makes obviously a lot of sense, because also they will share power in the Commonwealth with India, with South Africa, and, you know, with Nigeria. And this is very good. And the Secretary General of the Commonwealth should be wielding this veto. And the UK seat basically transferred to the Commonwealth directly. And then the 10th of this organization is the most fragile, but for peace in the world also a very important one, is the Organization of Islamic States. It's called IOC, and it's sitting in Jeddah. And it's very important that this organization also is represented in the UN Security Council permanently, with veto power as well, and then also to have the whole Islamic world represented on the UN Security Council via the IOC. It's not the Olympic Committee, don't get me wrong if I pronounce something wrong, but it's the International Organization of Islamic Organization International. I really have to look up if it's probably the French abbreviation. But I think it's getting very clear what I mean, and I'm totally deadly serious on it. Yeah. So these are the 10 organizations, and they really represent the whole world. They are basically, if you want, 5 votes for the white, 5 for the colors. You can make a lot of different equation if you want or not want. Yeah. But it's a fair world. It's a fairer world than it's now. It's the world of the 21st century, which includes all the people in the United Nations, which gives veto power also to the Islamic world and gives them a bigger stake in the global governance. It includes also the Southeast Asian countries. It includes India, which is so big and so important, now the biggest population in the world. It includes the Chinese in a new structure, but it includes them very much. It gives also rights and inclusion to Russia once they have lost this aggressive idea and they stay inside the Russian Federation and hopefully transform into a free federal Russia over time after Putin is gone. And this will definitely be happening, and I will make a separate podcast on that one. And it includes the American states, the African states, and basically this is the 10 permanent members of the UN Security Council I'm very much advocating to have. And how we can, as the EU already facilitate that, is basically by Paris transferring the seat to Brussels. And that's, I think, informally partly already happening. But it should be made in a way semi-official and very clear that it's Mr. Michel and not Mr. Macron, which is representing France at the United Nations. Anyhow, France was, in a way, not fully winning the Second World War, let's not forget. So that was more a gesture towards the goal, and obviously to make good for all the terrible things which France has experienced by the aggression of Nazi Germany. And I think there was a justification for the decision in 45 and during the Cold War, obviously, but now it's time to transfer that seat to the European Union. Of course, the British will not really want to transfer the seat to the Commonwealth, but you know, maybe some of their Commonwealth friends can also question the seriousness. And also Britain has to find a new global role. They always talked about the Commonwealth, but you know, then get serious and transfer the seat to the Commonwealth. It's not Westminster running the world anymore. Pax Britannica was of the 19th century, then was Pax Americana, and now it's Pax Europiana. That means basically a peace which is based on rules, regulations. We can call it multilateralism, but I call it NATO, EU, about this exactly seven sisters. I don't like the word multilateralism because it means that giving power to anybody without any kind of rules and values and principle is not the idea, but really keeping our very successful global system strong, but also reforming it to include everybody, to be open, to be fair, to be transparent, and to build more legitimacy by having more engagement, more inclusiveness, and more cooperation and more contribution as well. I will also talk about the funding of the UN, because definitely the UN needs more funding as well to task, to be able to manage the global crises, which we will certainly have many, from pandemia to the climate, to natural disasters, to wars, to refugee crises. The UN has many, many important tasks, and it must work better. And the way to have it better working is to increase also the legitimacy of its institutions and the decision-making of its institutions. So let me conclude with the topic of China. I have also seen where the headquarters of the various organizations of the Chinese, of the UN, is based. And we have really not enough in Asia. And I'm actually proposing a new deal with China. That means to get China more active in the UN, not less. I understand some, you know, after the virus and the WHO crisis, are calling for less. But this is not the right way. We have to engage China more, and also we have to protect the Hong Kong Chinese. And my proposal is to make an agreement with China and to have also Hong Kong as one of the UN seats. Possible also to move the WHO headquarters towards China, but also maybe other UN organizations away from Geneva and from Vienna. That's maybe hurting some in these beautiful cities, but they are rich enough. And then also to have Hong Kong as one of the seats of the United Nations. And also, please, then to keep up the deal with Hong Kong. That would be part of the deal. And you get some of the institutions, but you treat the Hong Kong Chinese residents there fairly according to the 99 agreement. That would be my proposal to integrate China further in the global system. Also, there can be maybe one day also a Secretary General from China. You know, we should really be open to the Chinese if the Chinese are ready to comply towards what the UN is about. Yeah? Otherwise, the question is why they are in. Yeah? You know, this is an organization very much about the four freedoms, which Roosevelt declared, about human rights, about rights and international law, you know. And there's not the right organization about whataboutism. Yeah? You can always find some compromises we made and some mistakes in the past, yes. And, you know, you can claim the church for the Inquisition and everything else. But this is not a serious debate, yeah? What is serious is, my apologies, my small studio here is not really having all these facilities like a pause button. And I will learn for the rest in the process of this, making this podcast. But I want to be very clear. We have to repeat what Kissinger and what Nixon did in 71 it started. We have to really engage the Chinese more in the global system, and we have to contain a hostile Russia and also regionally hostile Iran, because and these are the real hostile nations, and also their proxies from Syria to Nicaragua to Cuba, Venezuela, and partly Lebanon and Belarus. And these are the problematic nine states of the world. And China is not a hostile nation. China needs to be integrated, needs to be engaged, needs to be confronted where it's wrong, but in a positive attitude where we can really build a very much more successful global economy in the coming 2020s, and not along Chinese rules and engagements, and not in Chinese, yeah, but according to the world system of the seven sisters, which I have outlined, and according to the reforms which I have proposed now for the UN. So far, so good. Thanks a lot for that. And now we have closed the first part of the seven sisters. Now I will then go to the European part and the seven European tools and instruments, which are very important for the next years to reform, to open and to enlarge. But please let me remind you, we have the seven sisters. We basically need to enlarge them. They are working very good. We need to reform some of them, especially the UN, but we will do that. And, you know, this will be a very strong framework for the next phase of globalization after the success of the first 30 years from 1990 to 2020, now for the next 30 years to have this reformed Pax Europiana, I call the system, to be ready for tackling the challenges ahead. Thanks a lot.